Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and coming up this hour, Harvard historian and New Yorker staff writer Jill Lepore. Her really interesting new book is A History of How Americans Think About Life and Death. And we continue our June series about online dating with Charles Orlando from the dating site Your Tango, author of The Problem with Women is Men, and he will take your calls. But we begin this hour with Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries and City Councilman Charles Barron, the two main candidates running for Congress in the New York primary a week from Tuesday in the 10th Congressional District, parts of Brooklyn and Queens, including parts of Brooklyn Heights, Williamsburg, Fort Greene, Bed-Stuy, Clinton Hill, Ocean Hill, Brownsville, Coney Island, East New York, and Howard Beach. And I hope I got all the neighborhoods in there. They will get about 8 minutes each. Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries is up first. Assemblyman, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me on this morning.
You would be succeeding Congressman Adolphus Towns, who has endorsed your opponent. How do you see the Ed Towns legacy, and why would you be a more worthy successor?
Well, I think we have an opportunity in Brooklyn and in parts of Queens for a fresh start after 30 years of representing the district in one way. I would bring an approach that is, will build upon the aggressive, effective legislative advocacy that I've taken in Albany, whether that's on issues of criminal justice reform, the creation and preservation of affordable housing, trying to improve the quality of the public school system. That these are serious times that we face in the community. Many parts are suffering through high rates of unemployment, a significant foreclosure crisis, children trapped in the failed public school system, that now is the time, given all that's happening down in Washington, for serious legislators to go down to Congress and execute upon the business of the people, put aside partisan bickering. I think I've been effective at that in Albany, and certainly will build upon that track record down in Washington, D.C.
One local issue difference you have had with Councilman Barron is that you supported the Atlantic Yards project and he opposed it. He sees that as you going along and getting along with the powers that be rather than standing up to them. Is that a fair criticism?
Well, absolutely not. And the councilman seems to view my ability to get along with people, to form coalitions, to put together groups of individuals around common issues to advance a legislative agenda as a weakness. I actually think that it's a strength, and that any reasonable person who looks at how do you get things done in a legislative body up in Albany, down in the United States Congress, will have to conclude that there needs to be an ability to form coalitions, to develop relationships, to get along with people on issues of principle in terms of advancing and moving an agenda forward. Now, on the Atlantic Yards issue, the councilman is incorrect in stating my position. I've been very critical of the Atlantic Yards development as we've moved along. I've recognized that there is some potential for economic benefit to the community and to the borough, but I've also pointed out repeatedly that the failure to date to deliver upon the jobs and affordable housing that has been promised is problematic. There are many in the community who feel as if what was initially proposed by the developer presented a field of dreams, and to some, the reality has turned into a graveyard of broken promises. I've pointed that out publicly on many different occasions and will continue to do so. I also have introduced and passed in the Assembly last year a bill that would provide increased transparency and accountability as it relates to the Atlantic Yards project moving forward. Out of a recognition that the arena is not the end of this project, it's not even the beginning of the end, because there are 16 additional towers, some residential, some commercial, that have been proposed and agreed upon between the developer and the state government. Yeah. That will have to be built out all over right. A period of more than a decade.
On personality, does New York perhaps need someone more outspoken like Charles Barron to break through the din of the usual talking points in Washington?
Well, I think there are enough people down in Washington who are screaming at each other, who are self-promoters, who aren't interested in advancing an agenda on behalf of the business of the people. I'm not characterizing Councilman Barron. I'm characterizing the situation down in Washington as it exists right now. The choice that people will have to make is a clear one in this race as it relates to who I have been, what I've been able to accomplish, and the fact that I've simply been committed to doing the job of a legislator on behalf of the Central Brooklyn communities that I've been privileged to represent, effectively advance legislation on a wide variety of issues, including, for instance, Brian, the only meaningful effort at reforming the stop and frisk practices of the NYPD when I wrote the law that prohibits the NYPD from keeping a massive electronic database of personal information of more than a million New Yorkers who were stopped, questioned, and frisked, embarrassed, humiliated, but who had done nothing wrong. That database has been shut down as a result of my legislative efforts, and it's just one example of the types of advocacy that I'm going to bring down to the United States Congress.
Now, Ed Koch and others are trying to make Israel an issue in this campaign. They call Councilman Barron an enemy of Israel for what they say is referring to Israel as a terrorist state and comparing treatment of Palestinians to Nazi-like atrocities. How would you distinguish yourself from Councilman Barron on Israel-Palestine with respect to anything that the Congress might actually have a say on?
Well, I think that it's important for the United States to continue to its strong 60-year partnership, strategic friendship with the state of Israel. It's good for Israel, but more importantly, it's good for the United States. The Middle East is a very important region. We've worked closely together. Israel faces a very tenuous security situation in that region. You know, when I was in Israel in December of 2008, I had a conversation with some high-ranking members of the foreign ministry. And there was one statement that was made to me, Brian, that was very profound. It said to me, Hakeem, Israel exists and lives in a tough neighborhood. And, you know, I'm a kid from Crown Heights. I grew up during the 1980s. It was a tough time. I could appreciate the comment. It was both simple, yet elegant and comprehensive, because it didn't demonize anyone, but it just recognized that if you've got rockets flying from Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah to the north, Syria in chaos to the east of the Golan Heights, Iraq emerging from chaos, tremendous uncertainty in Egypt, Iran with nuclear aspirations that, of course, have to be thwarted. Any reasonable person should be able to conclude that Israel lives in a tough neighborhood and that its security is paramount, and that should be an important part of continuing our relationship between the state of Israel and the United States of America.
What committees would you hope to join, and what legislative specialties to develop if you go to Congress?
Well, I'm certainly interested in the Judiciary Committee, which will allow me to continue to advance much of the work that I've done in the criminal justice system, as well as it relates to our system of civil justice that we have in America. I would also be interested in the Energy and Commerce Committee, which deals with a significant number of issues related to our economy, how we can move things forward. There are many industries in New York that are growing: technology sector, innovation, economy, the entertainment sector, that will be important parts of our economic future as we move forward. You can deal with those issues as a member of the Energy and Commerce Committee. I also think, though, Brian, that...
And we have 30 seconds.
That it will be important to work closely with the president in his second term to download the power of the executive branch into the living rooms and the homes of the people of the 8th Congressional District on foreclosure relief and a wide variety of other areas.
Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Now, City Councilman Charles Barron, also running in that district. This is the one that Congressman Ed Towns is retiring from, including parts of Brooklyn Heights, Williamsburg, Fort Greene, Bed-Stuy, Clinton Hill, Ocean Hill, Brownsville, Coney Island, East New York, and Howard Beach. And again, I hope I got them all there. In there, here for his 8 minutes is City Councilman Charles Barron. Councilman, welcome back to WNYC. Sounds like we may have a cell phone problem here, but hopefully it'll be clear enough.
Could you hear it now?
Yeah, that's much better. First question as to Assemblyman Jeffries. You would be succeeding Congressman Adolphus Towns, who has endorsed you. How do you see Ed Towns' legacy, and why would you be a more worthy successor?
Well, I'm not even saying more worthy, because Ed Towns and I worked together over the years on issues in our district. Even though we were political opponents never liked my opponent characterized it because he didn't get the endorsement, calling us sworn enemies and backroom deals. None of that happened. Congressman Towns and I, we worked together over the years. We saved Star Ranch from being sold to a developer for $1.2 billion, which would have taken it out of Mitchell Lama. And a lot of people lost their homes and places of residence, including the Russian Jewish community that's there, blacks and Latinos that are there, and Star Ranch City is a very diverse community. We saved that working together. We saved two senior citizen centers from closing down. So I will continue to build on the interest and the things that the congressman was concerned about, and mainly the seniors and our youth, and develop programs for that. And he said, talked to both of us, interviewed both of us, and when he looked at the fact that I have 40 years of experience in leadership and organizing in our communities across this city, and particularly in the communities of the 8th Congressional District, and I was able to bring a ton of affordable housing in, number one in the city, and in Brooklyn especially, and number one in bringing affordable housing in and renovating parks, and able to get people who have low income to, and I define affordability, not what HPD says affordability. 80% of the AMI is not affordable in any of our city communities. It's more like $60,000 for a family of four when you have an area median income that's only on $28,000 in East New York or $19,000 in the South Bronx.
I asked the Assemblyman. I just want to go on so we can get a couple of issues in here in our short time. I asked Assemblyman Jeffries about your differences over Atlantic Yards. How do you see those differences?
Well, I don't even focus on him or the differences. I know he flip-flopped. That's what the Atlantic Yards people said. He has to deal with them on that. The fact of the matter is that's not a good project. That affordable housing, I don't think, is ever going to be built. I think the stadium is coming up, and they use the threat of eminent domain to displace businesses and people from their home. We had a unity plan that we wanted that would have brought in real affordable housing, that would have taken into consideration the environmental impact that this stadium is going to have, and that's the traffic congestion and the air pollution that would affect those in our community that already have a ton of upper respiratory diseases. So he flipped out. They said it, and everybody knows it, no matter what he tries to say now to get elected, and people don't want that kind of inconsistency.
You are famously outspoken, and I see that you said recently, I don't know if I'm going to get a single bill passed, and I don't care. We're going to rock them. But if you don't get anything passed, what good does rocking them do?
Well, first of all, you sound like you're in the Jeffries camp, because they keep repeating that over and over again. The bottom line is that I put it in the context of being real. We are going to a House of Representatives that has 435 members, and the majority of those members are Republican. And I said in that context, I may not ever get a bill passed, but we're going to have to bring a movement to Washington, D.C., the kind of leadership that I provide, if we're going to impact a House that has majority Republican. Again, you just can't go in there thinking that you're a great legislator and you're going to write some bills and get them through the House of Representatives. Then we have 100 senators, and by the way, no black senators. So 535 members of Congress, you're not going to go in there and have some fancy language and write some bills and get them passed. So I said, look, I don't care if I don't get a bill passed at all. We've got to fight. We've got to go in there and fight and bring a movement to Washington, D.C. If we're going to get these bills passed, we got to get movements going, because we have to impact the budget. We have to impact policies. It's not just thinking you're going to go there as a fresh congressperson and get some bills passed. Yeah, people have been there for decades and can't get things through a Republican Congress. And it was difficult for the president and the Democrats to get bills passed, and they had the House, the Senate, and the presidency. So I was being real, and it was talk saying we got to fight, we got to build movements. Most of the people listening to this show don't know who the prime sponsors were in the House and the Senate of the 1964 Civil Rights Act or the 1965 Voting Rights Act, because it's the movement that really passed those bills, not people going in there that usually get in front of bills because they go along and get along, and the governor will put you in front, or a speaker will put you in front of a bill, and then you talk about legislation. I mean, even the stop and frisk legislation that he speaks of, that didn't stop and frisk. It didn't even put a dent in it. As a matter of fact, they're still recording it on paper, and it increased after the legislation. Stop and frisk is not the issue, really. It's racial profiling. An extension of that is stop and frisk. And we shouldn't be talking about whether stop and frisk is good or not. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. It's violation of our human rights to move about peacefully in our neighborhoods.
I mentioned to Assemblyman Jeffries that Ed Koch and others are trying to make Israel an issue in this campaign. They call you an enemy of Israel for things that you have said. How would you distinguish yourself from Assemblyman Jeffries on Israel-Palestine with respect to anything Congress would have a say on?
I don't have to distinguish myself, Jeffries, and I'm not going to respond to Ed Koch nor Doug Hyken, who are Jeffries' friends and supporters, nor Jerry Nadler, who are his friends and supporters that want to make that an issue in this campaign. My foreign policy doesn't start with Israel. There are over 150-some-odd countries in the world. It starts with Africa. And I believe that the African continent is being exploited. Land is being taken in Africa. Babies are dying in Africa from starvation and hunger and AIDS is in Africa. They're building military bases in Africa. They're trying to still rip off the oil and gold and diamond of Africa. Then it goes to the Caribbean, where our brothers and sisters in the Caribbean Basin Initiative agreements, free trade is causing real problems. We need fair trade. And in Latin America, same thing about trade and humanitarian aid. Then it goes to Europe. If Greece and Italy and Spain, if these economies aren't stabilized and the euro keeps crashing, that's going to affect the global economy, which can affect the people in the 8th Congressional District. Then when we get to the Middle East, I made it clear over the years, there are several countries in the Middle East. I think that we should establish a Palestinian state and we recognize the state of Israel exists. Have a negotiated solution, not a military solution, and I deplore all forms of terrorism that intentionally kill innocent civilians, whether it's coming from an organization or a state. He is just trying to play up to the Israeli vote and make it seem divisive and all of that. No one can be against of what I just said, and I notice in his response he never even mentioned the Palestinian people, and that's the kind of rhetoric and talk that's going to continue the conflicts in the Middle East, because you have to be concerned about both sides and not one side, just so that you can collect it and get money.
We have 30 seconds left. What committees would you hope to join, and what legislative specialties?
This is going to be hard, but I'd love to be on a powerful Ways and Means Committee, because tax codes are important. I believe in progressive taxation. We certainly have to tax the rich more, and all committees that deal with education, labor, and housing. I would definitely want to be on those committees, and appropriation committee, where all the money gets appropriated from. Those will be very, very important committees for me. But anything dealing with education, housing, labor, and certainly taxation.
City Councilman Charles Barron, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And listeners, there you have some time with both candidates in New York's 8th Congressional District primary. I think I mistakenly said 10th at some point along the way. That's the 8th Congressional District, Tuesday, June 26th. And next week, we'll talk to candidates from three more New York congressional primaries, including the seats currently held by Charles Rangel and Nydia Velasquez. They'll be on, and their opponents, and the open seat in Queens being vacated by Gary Ackerman. Coming up next, Harvard historian and New Yorker staff writer Jill Lepore. Her really interesting new book is A History of How Americans Think About Life and Death. Stay with us.